For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning.
So we've met Bjorn. We've got to know him a little bit. We've had Gandalf bring everybody in two by two, and the plan seems to be going the way Gandalf said it would, or at least hoped that it would. And Bjorn is very interested in their stories about the goblins and then welcomes them in to have dinner or supper. And we're going to debate the use of those words in a little bit. But before we get there, we need to realize something about this part of the story. At this point, we are the most in a fairy tale than we have ever been before. So if we look back at the events that led us here, we have trolls, we have giants in the mountains, we have elves in their fancy house, which eventually becomes, you know, much bigger in the Lord of the Rings to this entire area of Rivendell. And then we also have goblins. Oh, and talking eagles and wolves, and now a man that's also a bear, and everybody he lives with. Or at least that lives with him and services him like servants as a part of his kingdom or something like that. He exists in this place kind of like royalty, a lord over his land, and yet seems to get along well with his subjects. And in this section, we get to know them a little bit better. But remember, as with all things in the land of faery, you have to be careful. Things are both magical and dangerous at the same time, comforting, familiar, but also alien, all at the same time. And it's that juxtaposition that drives us to seek fairy tales, to find something that starts out comfortable and then goes strange in ways that we couldn't predict before. And this is a scenario for Bilbo that feels very much that way as they sit down for dinner. So the very first description we get about this hall, as they're about to sit down and have dinner, is that it was now quite dark. This is reminding us that it is now past dusk, the sun has gone down, but I think it's also dark because we are now entering an unfamiliar space, somewhere that is foreign to our party, and especially Bilbo, and a place that he both feels comforted by, and we'll go over those details, but also is a little bit on edge. He's a little uneasy. It's a dark room. But then in come four beautiful white ponies and several large long-bodied gray dogs. These appear to be Bjorn's servants, and we learn a little bit later that the dogs can stand on their hind legs when they wished in order to carry things like plates for their dinner or supper. We'll get to that. But also, they bring in torches in their mouths in order to light up the room a little bit more. And so Bjorn is catering to his guests here. He is helping make them feel comfortable. He realizes the room is a little too dark. And on top of that, it goes into other details about the furniture in a little bit, where Bilbo, it's mentioned twice that Bilbo could sit on the furniture because it was so low to the ground, because it helped the animal servants serve everybody. But it also makes it more comfortable for Bilbo, interestingly enough. We get the note here that Bjorn and his animal friends or servants can speak with each other. It's another reminder, like the horses at the beginning, that they can all talk. They are communicating. These are intelligent creatures. And as if four ponies and a bunch of dogs wasn't enough to take care of this party, then we get snow white sheep led by a large coal black ram who are bringing in first a white cloth embroidered at the edges with figures of animals, and then the others have trays and bowls and platters and knives and wooden spoons. They're setting up the table. And this cloth is very interesting. It's embroidered with the figures of animals. But where did this cloth come from? You couldn't just order something like this off the internet. And Bjorn didn't really seem to be the type to travel to human villages and trade with them very often, although he probably did on occasion. Was this something Bjorn made? Was this something some of his animal friends made? Do they even have the ability to embroider cloth with figurines? And so they start bringing out the seats and setting up the tables. And of course, the seats are low enough for Bilbo to sit down on. And then we learn about this short, thick-legged seat that they bring out for Gandalf and Thorin, who I guess Thorin is assumed to be the next biggest other than Bomber because he's fat and maybe wouldn't have fit on the seat. But I think the real justification is that they are two who are getting a sort of place of honor. It's not so much about the thick legs supporting a greater weight as it is about this being a seat of honor. Because we're then told that Bjorn had a very similar big black chair with big thick legs. So it makes sense. These are the people of honor, a wizard and their supposed to be king who is trying to get his kingdom back. Then we get this interesting detail. They have to roll out these logs for the rest of the dwarves to sit on because they don't have normal chairs, because Bjorn doesn't really host that many people very often, and so he only has so many chairs available. But these logs are smoothed and polished as if somebody had spent a considerable amount of time making them function for an inside gathering rather than just be logs that you would keep outside or eventually chop for the fire. So it seems that Bjorn on occasion has hosted for more people, but just doesn't do it very often. In fact, we're told that this hall had not seen a gathering like this for many a year. Now, that might be normal for Bjorn and or Bjorn's people. What if this is a gathering place every so many years where Bjorn and some of his relatives, some of the people who still are part of this Bjornling sort of society, can get together? We don't know for sure, but maybe these are hints. Now, here's a part that I find super interesting. It says, there they had a supper or a dinner such as they had not had since they left the last homely house in the West and said goodbye to Elrond. Now, there's a reason why Tolkien would debate in this sentence if it was dinner or if it was supper, because in today's society, most of us just kind of merge these into the same thing. They are interchangeable. Basically, they're the final meal of the day. You get up and have breakfast. In the middle of the day, you take a break for lunch. And at the end of the day, you sit down for dinner or supper, depending on what part of, well, wherever you live and what the language seems to be. But that wasn't always the case. So I looked this up. In agricultural societies, the midday meal was the main substantial meal to fuel a day of hard work. And this was true in the US as it was in places in Europe and in many cultures. And the evening meal, often leftovers or a lightish dish, was called supper. So the middle of the day meal was often called dinner, and was the more hearty of the two meals, and the later meal was supper, where you'd have just a little bit more before you go to bed. Now, that leaves out lunch, but we're not going to get into lunch, but let's keep talking about dinner and supper. As societies industrialized and people's work schedules changed, the midday dinner became less common, and the evening meal, now often the largest of the day, became known as dinner. So dinner shifted later because it was the big meal, and people would take a quick, smaller lunch break because they were busy working in factories and things like that, and then they would have a longer, more substantial dinner later on, which kind of pushed out the use of supper. But there are some regional variances. In some regions, particularly in the American South and Midwest, the tradition of calling the midday meal dinner and the evening meal supper persisted longer. But of course, today they've kind of merged into the same last meal of the day sort of thing. So what they're actually debating here, at least the author is, or J.R.R. Tolkien is should this be called a supper or a dinner? And he corrects himself. At first, he's going to say it's supper because it's the evening, but then he says, or a dinner because they hadn't had a meal substantial like this in a long time. So he's using the word dinner to say, this is a big meal. This is kind of more like a feast than a, hey, let's just have a snack before bed, because that's what people would have understood. If he had stuck to supper and then said they had all this food, that would have been confusing. It would have been the right word for the right time, but not the right type of meal. So interesting, right? So they sit down to eat, and we get this interesting description here about the candles. The light of the torches and the fire flickered about them, and on the table were two tall red beeswax candles. This is a subtle nod. It's very quick, just dropped in here. Red beeswax candles. Tolkien often adds description to words, or especially nouns and creatures and trees and those kinds of things, in order to kind of flesh out the visuals. But also, these are beeswax candles. Bjorn has bees. He has a bunch of bees. He uses it for the honey, which makes sense because he turns into a bear. Bears like honey. But also, he uses them to create beeswax candles. He uses every part of the creatures that he is farming, at least in a way not to be dangerous to them, but the things that they make, he finds use for all of those things. He lives in complete symbiosis with his environment. And then we get this. Bjorn, in his deep rolling voice, told tales of the wild lands and this side of the mountains, and especially of the dark and dangerous wood. And this is the first foreshadowing we get about Mirkwood. He's telling stories about the place they're eventually going to have to go through, and we are starting to piece that together as readers. Remember, we don't have the map laid out in front of us specifically, and things keep happening that kind of keep changing the path a little bit, but this is a reminder. Mirkwood is out there. They're going to have to go through it. And for the first time, this is, well, I don't know if it's exactly the first time, but it feels like for the first significant point in the story, we're being told that Mirkwood is terrible. It's not just dark and dangerous. It is terrible. It is terrible enough to be featured in Bjorn's stories that he's sharing at dinner. But what are his other stories? What does he tell stories about? I'm guessing goblins and those types of things, but we don't get a description here. Tales of the Wild Lands is as much as it really says, and then notes the mountains and the forest. I would love to be a fly on the wall in order to hear more of Bjorn's stories of the Wild Lands. But unfortunately, we don't get that. Now, during this storytelling section, we have more talk of dark and spooky things. This situation is kind of teetering on a knife between comfort and uncomfortable, warm and friendly, and scary and dangerous. And then we get this line, which kind of lightens it up a little bit. The dwarves listened and shook their beards. I love that it says beards instead of heads, because when they shake their heads, the beards move more than their heads, so that becomes notable for them. But they know that they have to go through this forest, and they're not looking forward to it for a few reasons. It's not only dark and scary and terrible, but it's also a forest, and they're dwarves. They're much more at home underground than in a forest. Then they switch roles. Bjorn takes a break from his stories and seems to be getting a little drowsy, which is interesting because later on he seems to stay up all night. But at this moment, his stomach is full and he's feeling a little bit of it, you know, after one of those big meals, you can kind of feel tired. And then the dwarves talk about gold and silver and jewels and smithing, all of the things that they care about, but Bjorn has no interest in. And notice the difference there. Bjorn's interests are in the things that grow in nature and making things out of wood and trees and things that are replaceable. Mining into the earth does not make for replaceable things that you can make, right? You mine up all the iron goes into your things that you're making and then disappears. It doesn't exist in the earth anymore. So in some ways, the dwarves are a contrast to what Bjorn does. They live in not exactly symbiosis with their environments. They live with their environments, and I'm sure they have a lot of respect for the earth and the things that they unearth, but they're not replaceable. On a farm, you can seed more crops, you can plant more trees, you can add to your bee farm and make more honey. But underground, you just consume. And this is reinforced by a note that there were no gold or silver things in his hall. In fact, the only things that were metal at all were some of the knives that they were using. And again, I have to wonder, where did those come from? Were they gifts from somebody else? Did he get them in trading? He didn't make the knives himself. He may have carved things like forks out of wood, but not metal knives. Now might be the best time ever to pick up a new language. Now, you might plan on traveling in the future or advancing your career, or maybe you just love learning something new. I've mentioned countless times how I find it so fascinating that J.R.R. Tolkien was so into all of these different languages and how much he had learned to speak and also understand the language at such a detailed level. And that inspires me to learn more about these things, like the Norse languages that were used for the names of the dwarves and Gandalf. All of that stuff is so cool. And that's why I'm excited to have Rosetta Stone as our sponsor this week. They offer 25 different languages and they have 30 years of experience teaching everybody using a process that is faster to learn and you retain the information longer. It's also great for learning pronunciation and you can do it wherever you are, whenever you want, right on your desktop or your mobile app. So don't wait, unlock your language learning potential now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Then we get more signs of comfort. They sit for a long time at the table, drinking bowls filled with mead. Notice they're not cups, they're bowls. And it makes sense, right? Like if you have a bunch of animals, they're not going to be able to pick up cups or mugs, but they could drink out of bowls. So the idea that they would have extra bowls to drink from makes sense for somebody like Bjorn. And it gets darker outside. More fires were built. We're building comfort and yet things are getting darker. It's getting deeper into the night. We get lines like the light of the dancing flames on the pillars of the house behind them, and dark at the top like trees of the forest. It's feeling cavernous in here, and the shadows are lengthening would be a phrase for that. And oftentimes the shadows lengthening means something like the sun is getting low on the horizon, but here it's a psychological lengthening. It's a, they're starting to take note, or at least Bilbo is, because this seems to be from Bilbo's perspective for the most part. Bilbo is noting that the shadows seem to be more obvious now, or seem to be getting longer. There's also odd sounds. Bilbo hears a sound like wind in the branches stirring on the rafters, and the hoot of owls. These are the kinds of sound effects that you would add into, I don't know, an old-timey, spooky movie of some sort. And then he starts to nod off, Remember, he's comfortable, but he's a little bit on edge, but he's also very tired. And the voices, and I love this line, seemed to grow far away. How many of us have ever, especially in childhood, nodded off to sleep where you could still hear voices? Maybe your parents in the other room. Maybe you fell asleep on a couch. And people continue to walk around and interact around you. But subconsciously, or maybe even consciously, as you were falling asleep, you could hear those voices. And those voices were somehow soothing, but yet distant sounding. And then the door slams. Bjorn has left. Bilbo wakes back up from his little nap, I guess you could say. And the dwarves are sitting on the floor around the fire. And they begin to sing. So let's take a listen to what this song is actually about. Here, we'll read through the whole thing and then I'll break it down. The wind was on the withered heath, but in the forest stirred no leaf. Their shadows lay by night and day, and dark things silent crept beneath. The wind came down from mountains cold, and like a tide it roared and rolled. The branches groaning, the forest moaned, and leaves were laid upon the mold. The wind went on from west to east, all movement in the forest ceased, but shrill and harsh across the marsh, its whistling voices were released. The grasses hissed, their tassels bent, the reeds were rattling. On it went, o'er shaken pool under heavens cool, where racing clouds were torn and rent. It passed the lonely mountain bare and swept above the dragon's lair. There black and dark lay boulders stark, and flying smoke was in the air. It left the world and took its flight over the wide seas of the night. The moon set sail upon the gale, and stars were fanned to leaping light. Now, every poem is open to interpretation. That's the nature of art, right? But you also have to consider that oftentimes there is intent by the artist themselves, and there's a reason why Tolkien would include certain poems and songs in these books, not just because they give us a glimpse of the culture that they come from, the things they value, the phrases they use, the language they speak, but it also sometimes gives us foreshadowing or encapsulates a story in a fun little passage, whether that's something that happened in the past or it's something that is currently happening. And remember, this is a fairy tale. The end is already known. In fact, Tolkien has already foreshadowed what's going to happen at the end of this story. So when we get a song like this, sometimes it's exactly representative of the story at large. And I think that's what we're getting here. So the first passage talks about the wind, and it's on the withered heath in a forest stirring no leaf. This wind is representative of the dwarves themselves. They have been cast aside. They have a withering heath. They've fallen apart. And then the wind comes down from the mountains, the Blue Mountains, where they were over in the west, and roared, and it starts traveling across to the east. It went from west to east, and movement in the forest ceased, and shrill and harsh voices came across the marsh. People start reacting and hissing, and the voices in the forest are evil. The necromancer lives in the forest. It heads over grasslands, it goes over to the lonely mountain, past the lonely mountain bear, and swept above the dragon's lair, going directly to the dragon. And then we get the description of the dragon, black and dark, lay boulders stark, and flying smoke was in the air, the dragon attacking things, burning things. It then leaves the world and takes to flight over the wide seas of the night. The moon set sail upon the gale, and stars were fanned to leaping light. Something leaves the world here. If this isn't just the dwarves in general, then it's something more specific. Maybe it's Thorin. Maybe this is foreshadow for Thorin succeeding where he planned to succeed in a, well, monumentous but sometimes terrible sort of way, and then leaving the world. Now, another way to interpret this would be something like the west wind from Valinor, and this is the spirit of the Valar, or the whispering of the Valar, or the influence of Iluvatar in the events and driving things back over to the Lonely Mountain. But the way the poem starts doesn't seem to be referencing that. it's more likely that it's referencing the dwarves or even Thorin himself. But those are just my interpretations. If you have other thoughts on this, and if maybe I'm missing something obvious, please let me know. Comment and respond on the Discord or comment under the post on the Patreon or wherever. You guys know how to do that stuff. So after the singing, Bilbo starts to nod off again. It's sleepy time for the little guy. And then Gandalf stands up and makes an official proclamation. Basically, we all need to get some sleep. Let's go to sleep. But hey, remember, don't go outside. And this is that other piece of it. Bilbo's comfortable. He's falling asleep. And then Gandalf's like, yeah, if you go outside, you're on your own there. You're taking your peril into your own hands, basically. So maybe don't do that and wait till the sun comes up. But otherwise, just stay in here. You'll be fine. And we find out that Bilbo has a little bed. He has a tiny mattress with some straw and some woolen blankets. And we're told that he snuggled into them very gladly, summertime though it was. And remember, they keep mentioning that it's summertime, but there are these little instances of, yeah, but it seems colder, or it seems like there should be a fire in here anyway, or you're going to snuggle under those heavy blankets anyway. There's something about this coldness in the air, maybe, or the comfort of the blankets being something that draws Bilbo in the midst of this kind of scary situation, but also in a longing for home and comfort. And even though he's exhausted as he is and snuggled up in those blankets, he wakes up in the middle of the night. And I remember reading this as a child. The first time I read The Hobbit, I've mentioned before, I was in about third grade. So what is that, about 10 years old? And I remember after reading this, that this section of the book stood out to me from other sections in probably a more vivid way than was actually described here. And maybe that's just the nature of being a child and being in a situation like this seeming very scary. You know, at 10 years old, you rarely spend any situations at night outside of a place that's very comfortable. But to be in this kind of strange, strange cabin with these animals that talk and can walk on their hind legs, and what appears to be your host outside who has transformed into a bear and is making sounds outside, seems kind of scary to a 10-year-old. And it's not that I was afraid of it, it's that I noted how odd and unexpected it was. Wait, he's their host. Why would he be more dangerous as a bear? Unless this is almost more like a werewolf sort of thing, where he loses a certain sense of his own humanity when he is a bear and he acts more on instinct like a bear would. And we get some little hints about this, very, very slightly. The dwarves and Gandalf were all asleep, to judge by their breathing, but then a splash of white on the floor came from the high moon, which was peering down through the smoke hole in the roof. Now, it doesn't tell us it's a full moon, but a big, bright, white moon that can shine all the way down through the smoke hole in the roof and make a big white mark on the floor seems like a very large, full-like moon. Now, we're not told anything before this about Bjorn being unable to control his changing due to the cycles of the moon or anything like that, but a were person leads one to have certain types of questions about how does that work. And then we get this. There was a growling sound outside and a noise as of some great animal scuffling at the door. Bilbo wondered what it was. Could it be Bjorn? And that passage right there, I find the most interesting. An animal, a great animal scuffling at the door. It's as if Bjorn, the bear, knows that there are things inside here and is trying to get in but can't. Like he locked himself out on purpose. Kind of disturbing when you think about it. If you were in Bilbo's shoes, you wouldn't feel very safe either. And we get further justification for that interpretation. He wondered whether it could be Bjorn in enchanted shape and if he could come in as a bear and kill them. He dived under the blankets, Bilbo, and he hid his head and fell asleep again at last, in spite of his fears. All right. Thank you for tuning in this week. And it's so much fun to get through all this Bjorn content. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. And it's time to shout out our newest patrons. Joe V, I think I might have mentioned you last week. I don't recall. Sometimes the dates match up with the day I recorded, and I just want to make sure I don't miss anybody. The Bestest Boy and Chad S. Thank you so much for signing up. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. And I have to shout out all of my VIP patrons. Thank you so much for your continued support. AK Music Lover, Aldarion Was Right, Apollo, Atle Morton, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cali Cat, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, Huan Is My Hero, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much for all of your support and for continuing to be here and keep this going. I really do appreciate it. Also, we have a new review on Apple Podcasts to read out. If you'd like to help out in other ways, leave a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to this on. And if you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts in the US, I can see it. Outside of the US, it's still very helpful. I just can't see all the different locations. So this is from Yo Mama. I think that's a cat face, and hands raised in the air. I think that's the full name. It says, Yo Mama says, wow, I haven't said that in a long time. This podcast might be too good. If Feanor is the greatest of the elves, Tom is the greatest of the podcaster. Holy crap. If I were Morgoth, I'd sneak into Tom's studio and steal this podcast and wear it as a crown. That's amazing. For those still getting into the lore and don't get the reference yet, just listen to the podcast, bro. It's fire. Thank you so much, Yo Mama. I really do appreciate that. And thank you to everybody who continues to support this show. I truly couldn't do it without you. And after this recording, I'm going to go talk with my patron buddies. That's a whole bunch of you in our bonus episode. And I haven't exactly decided what to do yet about that one. Usually I have kind of a thing in mind when I record the episode, but I don't know. We'll see where that goes. All right. Thanks for being here. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And if you're sleeping in somebody's house and you hear what sounds like a giant bear outside the door, don't go outside. Good advice from Gandalf. All right. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.